today. Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here is to understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 10, 15, and 20 years. Then during our second hour, we will turn to God and engage on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our phone number for those who would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said over the next 2 hours is 877-300-7645. The first item in the news is one that we were covering at the end of our news hour yesterday, but it is so significant in terms of how it will shape our world over the next 10 to 15 years. I wanted to continue with it. The Sunni uprising in Iraq has turned extraordinarily violent. It represents a significant, this article says, challenge to the rule of Prime Minister Nouri Kamal al-Maliki, whose consolidation of power over the security forces and the judiciary has enabled him to target Sunni leaders for arrest. And it has raised alarms amongst world powers. It is interesting that in Iraq, and we have Larry with us this morning. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Yada.
It's interesting in Iraq that the Americans couldn't count. We decided that based on a series of lies that we would invade Iraq. The lies were that Saddam Hussein had not only had weapons of mass destruction, which he had none, so that turned out to be a complete and utter lie. Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, and George W. Bush collectively perpetrating that lie, but they also perpetrated the lie that yellowcake uranium had been purchased from Niger to make a nuclear bomb, and that they were on the cusp of building one. That also turned out to be a lie. And then that same threesome told the world that that Al Qaeda was operating out of Iraq, and that there was a direct connection between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. All three of those things were completely untrue.
Well,
all of them lies.
If I'm not mistaken, Al-Qaeda is a Sunni operation.
Well,
the majority of Iraqis are Shia.
Well, that is true. But the reason that there was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq was because of the fact that Saddam Hussein was a secular dictator. And as a secular dictator, the resolutely Islamic Al-Qaeda despised him. There was a push by Osama bin Laden, Assad, to mount the ultimate jihad against Iraq, against Saddam Hussein, following Saddam Hussein's invasion of Kuwait. Now, the United States pleaded with Saudi Arabia to allow King George I to be the great liberator of Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, something that was stupid. We were much better off with Kuwait and Saudi Arabia under Saddam Hussein's control. Saddam Hussein was a ruthless dictator, but he was a secularist, and therefore he was vastly superior to the Saud family or the emirs in Kuwait who fund most terrorism around the world. And so Al-Qaeda, rather than being a ally of Saddam Hussein, wanted to kill him. They were the furthest from being allies. They were enemies of one another. It's just part of the just vast sea of lies that the United States used as its justification for invading both Iraq and Afghanistan, leaving over 10,000 Americans dead and over a million Iraqi and Afghanis dead as a direct result of our stupidity. Well, before we invaded Iraq, we were going to impose democracy. And now, you don't really have to be the sharpest marble in the drawer to figure out that if you invade a country that is 65% Shia Islam and about 30% Sunni Islam, with 5% being a variety of other options, that if you invade that country and you allow one person, one vote, what is going to be the composition of the government in that country? Is it going to be Sunni and therefore in opposition to Iran? Or is it going to be Shia and therefore in league with Iran? Now, I'm just going
to
ask you.
It's a wild guess if you want me to.
Okay, yeah, guess, please.
Shia.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened. And so Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani, who is an Iranian living in Iraq, did, and as well as Sattar, which was the second highest ranking Shia Muslim in Iraq, who also ran a very large armed militia. One that was deadly to Americans, probably killed more Americans than any other individual, Sadar, the second highest ranking Shia Muslim, is they created political parties that were based upon Shia Islam, which were funded and controlled entirely by the mullahs in Tehran. And so by invading Iraq and giving Iraq to the Shias, we made it Iran West. And it was obvious that was going to happen. It was the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani would tell Americans regularly, by what you've done, you've just given us the country. Thank you very much. Now go away. Well,
right.
So America.
In addition to that, you don't have to be. You have to be about as sharp as a marble to believe that democracy equates to freedom anyway. So.
Well, of course, because democracy is always mob rule. It's the tyranny of the majority over the minority, which is what you have now. Recognizing the damage that we had done, the great plan of King George II and his control of the military was to create what was called awakening councils. Since we had created a Shia army in Iraq, in this essence gave a whole military regime with attack helicopters and a new air force and armored personnel vehicles and tanks and all sorts of weaponry to the Shias in Iraq, who were now not only aligned with Iran but controlled by Iran. We decided maybe the thing to do is to keep them at bay. We'll provide small weapons, AR-15s and Kalashnikovs. We'll supply those to the Sunnis, and so we'll use the tribal setup in Iraq, and we'll find the warlords within the communities. They'll form their own Sunni militias. We'll arm them. We'll pay them. We'll provide uniforms for those militias, and the Sunnis can then hold off the armed assault of the Shias through these awakening councils. And when the idea was first posted, you've been listening to this program for a long time, I said, this has got to be among the dumbest things Americans ever done. That there's this myth that these awakening councils allowed America to withdraw from Iraq. And I said, it's just a matter of time before these weapons are used to create a civil war. And they were. That's how the civil war in Syria began.
And of course, we knew that was going to happen. And you know, when we say the USA is paying for it, let's just say that, you know, the powers that be, and I think they laugh about this, by the way, this is just my opinion, they have the American taxpayers funding their little war hours.
Yeah, that's great. So the deteriorating situation, according to the article, in Iraq highlights the sectarian tensions that have risen across the region, particularly amid the raging civil war in Syria. You know, it doesn't highlight them. It's the reason for them. When Americans provided these weapons to the Sunnis, who are a minority in Iraq, but a majority in Syria, the Sunnis, when they saw the peaceful protests against the minority Shia government in Syria, saw that as their great opportunity for jihad, because with their small arms, they were having a very difficult time in suicide bombs, which they were deploying every day, multiple times a day, but they were not making enough headway against a 65% majority in Iraq, but they have a 65% majority in Syria, and so they weaponized what was a peaceful protest. And as a result of America's stupidity, look at the mess that region is in right now, and in Iraq as well now.
You've got essentially
all-out war.
Because I don't see it as stupidity. I think it's intentional. I really believe that, but that's just me.
Yeah.
I think there's experts that know what you know and I know. I really believe that. And, you know, they spend all their time studying this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
They're going to do when they flood the market.
Yeah. I've spent time with I Love a War, John McCain, personally, a lot of time one-on-one with him.
Yeah, he's a notable jerk, in my opinion. But
yeah, and I've spent a lot of time one-on-one with George Bush.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you, those guys are not smart. No one is going to ever accuse either man of being smart.
Oh, no, I didn't accuse either of them of being smart.
And I spent a fair amount of time with Karl Rove. And while Karl Rove, I think, is smart, man, that man is really rotten. He's evil. But so is George Bush. He's evil, too.
Yeah.
And I only say this because I think that for the most part, the people that America elects as its leaders are not typically very smart. I think America is far more comfortable with people that do not have an IQ that is well beyond theirs. And they elect people whose rhetoric they are comfortable with. And so the people that we have elected, I don't think are the leaders of a grand scheme. I think they're way too dumb to have perpetrated a scheme. I think they're just flat out stupid. And that they're
typically tied in is what it is.
Yeah.
Club.
In the case of George W. Bush, he wanted to be a wartime president because it made him more popular. He told me that he wanted to be a wartime president before he was even elected president. And he accomplished what he wanted, but at a consequence of a million lives and $6 trillion worth of spilt U.S. coin. That's not funny. No, it isn't. We'll be back. We have Larry with us today. We're talking about the mess that the United States created in Iraq. You know, one of the things that just always strikes me about these kinds of disasters is that the American psyche is that, all right, so Muslims flew planes into our buildings. They don't even want to call them Muslims. They want to say it's Al-Qaeda flew planes into our buildings. And so what are we supposed to do? Nothing. When you say it was suicidal, counterproductive to invade either Iraq or Afghanistan. And they justify it as, well, we had to do something, as if doing the wrong thing is better than doing nothing, or that the only alternative is to either do the wrong thing or to do nothing, that they can't even conceive of the idea there might actually be a right thing to do. And in the case of Iraq, it was far better for us as if Saddam Hussein controlled Saudi Arabia and Kuwait as well as Iraq, because he would have provided a marvelous buffer against Iran, which is the biggest threat in the region. He would have kept would not have been a civil war in Syria. And he would have stopped the Saudi and Kuwaiti funding of terrorism around the world. It would have been a marvelous, by comparison, situation. And yet we invaded anyway, and the consequence of that invasion, Americans don't want to know that they have the blood of over a million people on their hands, but they do.
Well, not only that, but there were some companies that got very, very wealthy over this. So.
Yeah, like Halliburton.
Great excuse. Yeah, like Halliburton. And, you know, sure. I mean, this is what happens.
Yep, it's why yeah. In fact, it's the media also makes fortunes. The news agencies in particular, and television and newspapers get to report on the war. That's why they support wars like this. That's why they go along with the patriotic line and support them, because they make fortunes on reporting the wars. This article reads,
this month is May is support the military month or something. Mm-hmm. You know, there's every month is a something another. But you know, I can support people in the military. I'm former military. My son is special operational forces in the military. What I do not support is their missions. And as far as I'm concerned, I think they're being used as muscle for the banksters, that's what they're used for.
and that's where we are. We have a difference here. We are in total agreement that the missions that the military has been deployed on have been counterproductive. Our invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan were counterproductive. Our involvement in Libya was counterproductive. And so rather than making a bad situation better, we made a bad situation much worse. And it was obvious we were going to do that at the cost of over a million lives and trillions of dollars.
I'm no fan of Gaddafi. He looked like a drunk monkey the last time I saw him speak at the
U.S. Yeah, syphilitic.
But he did have, wasn't he coming up with a gold-backed African dollar? And there were things like he nationalized his oil and wouldn't give it to the West. Isn't that true?
Yeah, all sorts of reasons that the United States and Europe wanted him out, and they would prefer to deal with the Salaf terrorists, which is who controls the country now. This article goes on to
say, were fleeing Sharia law, they would flee into Libya.
Right. Because it was a secular government, as was the government of Iraq. The Sunni rebellion, as the article goes on to say, is seeking to topple the government of Bashar al-Assad. That's really not true. They can't, as a 30% minority, they're not going to topple the government. All they're trying to do is protect themselves against the onslaught that has been brought against them, and they're trying to stop their being treated with what's called the mini status, which is a Sunni regime will treat Shias as if they are domesticated animals. The same way that an Islamic country treats non-Muslims. And so they're just simply lashing back at the maltreatment that they have received and using the tools that America gave them. America's mindset is that if you give everybody weapons, there'll somehow be peace. So the more weapons that we supply, the more peaceful these situations become. Now, of course, that's stupid, and exactly the opposite has occurred. In Iraq, the central government has aligned with the Syrian government. Gee, I wonder why. Because the central government in Iraq is in league with Iran, and Iran controls the government of Syria directly and absolutely because of the American invasion of Iraq. While the citizens of the Sunnis, the 30% minority, have not only sided with the rebels, they have supplied the guns that armed their protests. Shattering News. I'm your host, Yada. We're considering what's happening in Iraq, which was inevitable. It was, I do not claim to be a prophet, but I certainly predicted that this is exactly what was going to happen, and did so now 7 years ago. I predicted that by creating the awakening councils and arming them, that this would be the result of having done so. And what we have now is the Shia government, backed by and loyal to and controlled by Iran, using the weapons that America has provided, tanks and attack helicopters and artillery, and they're deploying that against the Sunni population. And the Sunni population is responding with the small weapons, the small arms that America has provided to them, and we've created a civil war not only in Iraq, but that same civil war that we started is now in Syria. And the Syrian conflict is a direct result of what the United States did in Iraq, not only with the Awakening Councils, but also with giving Iraq to Iran so that they could extend their influence. We made a mess of the world.
Yeah, didn't we hear a lot of positives about the Arab Awakening, the Arab Spring? You know, I mean, even in Egypt.
Yeah, there's a difference between the Awakening Councils and the what was called the Arab Spring. The Awakening.
I understand that, but I'm saying there's so many fronts where accidentally we're wrong. It's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing how widespread our errors are, and how virtually everything the United States does abroad now is counterproductive. And so you do have to ask yourself every once in a while, hey, if everything we're doing is coming up snake eyes, is there perhaps a snake operating within the government? Smells like a skunk, looks like a skunk, perhaps it is a skunk. The largely Sunni rebellion in Syria is trying to topple the government of Bashar al-Assad. It's not a largely Sunni rebellion. That would be, you know, like the majority, or even the a plurality of the rebels would be Sunni. They're 100% Sunni. Anybody that isn't Sunni in Syria is siding with the government. The Christians who don't like Assad, but they recognize that if Assad is deposed, they're dead.
They're dead.
And so the great jihad now that is taking place in Syria is strictly a civil war, a proxy war, actually, between Sunni and Shia Muslims. And the deadly thing about that war that the United States facilitated, without the United States invasion of Iraq, that war does not take place. Without the United States creating the Awakening Councils, which 7 years ago I screamed to everyone that would listen that this would be the result of us arming them. And the direct result is that we've created a proxy war that's stunningly deadly, because you've got the Europe and the United States on the side of the fundamentalist Islamic terrorists, the Sunnis, along with our proxies, Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and then you've got Iran, China, and Russia on the side of the regime, of the Assad regime. And so when you have a proxy war that has the whole world now, the superpowers, all taking sides, it's the very thing that leads to world war. And so this situation in Syria is going to get much, much worse, and will probably never get better. As a matter of fact, today's news is Nasrallah, who is the head of Hezbollah. Hezbollah is just like the U.S. Marines are to the United States, Hezbollah is to the Iranian government. And Hezbollah is the largest Shia terrorist organization in the world. Hezbollah has not wanted to engage in the conflict in Syria, even though they side, of course, with Assad and the Alawite government, because they want to use their weapons to destroy Israel. They don't want to use their weapons to kill Sunni Muslims. But Nasrallah announced today that if the situation gets any worse in Syria, he will do exactly what I said he was going to do 2 years ago. And that if he does this, it's going to make the carnage thus far look like a mosquito bite. And he says he is going to deploy Hezbollah against the Sunnis, should the situation get any worse. And now if you have the world's largest and best armed Shia terrorist group opposed to the largest now and best armed Sunni terrorist organizations, which are the rebels. Can you imagine the carnage that's going to take place in that country?
Yes,
and,
I can.
And then what? Then there is literally nothing that can be done. It's why Obama's statement that that chemical weapons would be a red line and that the United States would respond to it, and now that they've used chemical weapons, Obama's saying, well, you know, I wasn't the only one to say it. It's the comparative deal that other countries also said that it would be a red line, and, you know, I'm just not going to respond quickly. I'm going to think about it, well, because there's nothing you can do.
How many can prove they really did use chemical weapons? Because even Assad was sitting over there saying, they're going to accuse us of using chemical weapons. We're not going to do it.
Yeah, well,
I mean, he was saying that in advance.
The reality is the chemical weapons have definitely been used in Syria. Whether or not it was Assad that used them or the rebels that used them is a good question. Because Islam is so disingenuous that Muslims very often kill their own. Sunnis will kill Sunnis if they can stage the Sunnis' death to make it look like a Shia perpetrated the crime so that they win public support. That's how disingenuous
wars are started.
That's exactly what they would do. So we can't say for certain. We can say for certain that chemical weapons have been used. We cannot say for certain who deployed them. This is interesting.
I've seen some YouTubes of captured, I don't know who was who, to be honest,
right.
Because I don't speak Arab. But, you know, I watched them just, you know, kind of laugh and beat a guy to death and finally shoot him in the head a couple times, and they all went, Allahu Akbar.
The religion is savage.
This guy was just a piece of trash. He was just begging for his life, and he was just beaten to death and shot in the head a couple times.
And they
acted like maybe a cup of milk had got spilled at a table or something, if that much. But they were happy about it.
You're celebrating it. Yeah, celebrating death. It's the nature. Islam exists to celebrate death.
I believe that.
The religion literally exists to perpetrate and celebrate death. Now here's the
fascination with dead bodies.
Here's a closing line on that article. It says the sectarian, which is the Sunni Shia fissure, is evident in the rhetoric of the Sunni rebellion here. Militants over the last few days have referred to Iraq's army as a force loyal to Iran. In other words, they have said exactly, the Sunnis there recognize what I've been saying now for 10 years, that the United States created an army for Iran when it invaded Iraq. And now the Sunnis are affirming that reality. While the Shias here have cast the formerly peaceful Sunni protesters, and they were peaceful until the Shias decided they would use American tanks and helicopters to kill them en masse. The Shias are referring to the Sunni Awakening Councils as extremists beholden to al-Qaeda. Now, they know that there is no al-Qaeda in Iraq, but the realization is that if you are a Islamic government, particularly a Shia government, and if you can label the terrorists who are opposing you al-Qaeda, then you win the sympathy of the world because they view that as al-Qaeda equals bad. But here's the deal. If they are, in fact, emboldened to whatever vestige exists of al-Qaeda, then America, by arming the Awakening Councils, its stated purpose was for the Sunnis to oppose al-Qaeda. And yet, if this is true, they have become al-Qaeda. Turning to another article, same part of the region, same story, just the next day. Another 15 policemen and 31 Sunni Islamist militants were killed in clashes in the northern city of Mosul, sources said, on the third day of the most widespread violence in Iraq since the U.S. troops left in 2011. Gunmen attacked Mosul north of Baghdad on Wednesday night and seized parts of the city after using the mosque loudspeaker from the minarets urging the Sunnis to join the great battle. So this is strictly motivated by the Islamic religion. Military sources said the federal police and the army regained control after surrounding the town with tanks. Federal police said 31 militants had been killed as a result of the helicopter and tank attacks. Troops and tanks encircled other towns north of Baghdad, using special forces to drive out the militants who took control overnight. The highways between Kirkuk and Baghdad were closed. Whose tanks do you think that they are using?
American tanks.
Right. And guess what we put on the side of those tanks?
What?
Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar.
Wow, brilliant.
We wrote Allahu Akbar on the side of the tanks and gave them to the Shia militants.
I know. More that's than why I get up every day and go to work.
Oh, yeah. Which you had Allahu Akbar was what was screamed by the Sunni Muslims who flew planes into our buildings. And so we give the Shia Muslims tanks, American tanks, and attack helicopters, and we write Allahu Akbar on the side. You get to a point after a while where it does become difficult to say this is all because we're really stupid. More than 100 people have been killed in the fighting since Tuesday when troops stormed a Sunni protest camp near Kirkuk, triggering clashes that quickly spread. So what we had was a peaceful protest. Just as we had peaceful protests initially in Syria, Muslims don't like peaceful protests, so they sent in the kinds of weaponry. There were attack helicopters and tanks against the peaceful demonstrators to murder them. The clashes were the bloodiest since thousands of Sunni Muslims started to protest in December to demand an end to what they see as the marginalization of their sect by, I tell you, when you call, which is about 80% of the world's Islamic population, was Sunni Muslims, or about 90%, 80 to 90% of the world's Islamic population, and you call them a sect, that's pushing it pretty far. They don't like the fact that marginalization is an awfully soft term for treating people as if they were animals, the dhimmi status that is imposed by Muslim upon Muslim and Muslim on non-Muslim. We'll conclude this line of reasoning when Shattering Myths returns in a moment. Shattering Myths. We are talking about the mess that we have created in Iraq, the sectarian violence, according to this article, including multiple bombs attacks, all very similar to what we witnessed in Boston, where pressure cooker bombs are put on sidewalks, have killed scores of people this year. The provisional reports from rights group Iraq Body Count indicated that 1,365 people have been killed in the first 3 months of this year. Iraq Body Count only reports those deaths that are reported to the Western media. Their numbers are typically underreported by about a factor of 10. Therefore, the number that would be more likely having been killed in the first 3 months of this year would be 13,000. You know, there weren't even 1,000, maybe 2,000 people that were killed by Saddam Hussein during his entire reign. And now you've had over 1 million people killed since the U.S. invasion. That was not smart. At least 14 members of an anti-Al-Qaeda Sunni militia, so this is now, they're calling themselves an anti-Al-Qaeda Sunni militia, have been killed in attacks in western Iraq. Now, here's the deal. Their Awakening Council, the purpose of the Awakening Council was for them to oppose Al-Qaeda, but they were Americans arming Sunnis, and Al-Qaeda is a Sunni terrorist organization. And so now what we call the Awakening Council were murdered by the Shias that we empowered and equipped. The Awakening Council fighters were reportedly attacked by a suicide bomber with mortar fire as they gathered to collect their salaries. Now, that's another issue that most Americans aren't aware. With these Awakening Council members, we not only supplied them with weapons.
Paycheck as well.
And with paycheck as well. So they were, and we're still paying them. And so, and they're the very people that went in and weaponized the protests in Syria. And they're the ones now that have turned what were peaceful protests in Iraq into a civil war.
It's strange, as an American taxpayer, how we get up and we just fund all this stuff.
Yeah. So the mortar, the salaries they were picking up were American paid. And the mortars that were fired at them and the suicide bombers using the explosive from the mortars were supplied by Americans. Three soldiers were also killed in a roadside bomb when a convoy traveled north of Fallujah. The attacks came amid a spate of bombings across Iraq on Wednesday. Elsewhere, a car bomb exploded, killing policemen in the Shia districts of Baghdad. Another street-side bomb killed both policemen and civilians. Another bomb in the Banji district north of Baghdad killed both policemen and civilians. There have been at least 200 people killed in the wave of violence over the last week or so. And the Awakening Councils, drawn from the country's Sunnis, have been a key factor in reducing violence. That's what they say. So this is the articles that are still parroting the old U.S. myth that the Awakening Councils reduced the violence in Iraq, when in fact they are the cause of the violence in Syria, and they're the ones that are now being murdered by the Shias in Iraq. In other words, the Shias whom we empowered as a government are now looking at the Sunni Awakening Councils as their single largest threat, and they're using tanks and attack helicopters to kill them. Last week, Mr. Malaki, the Shia head of Iraq, said that the Syrian, the sectarian conflict that had erupted is now on the level of a civil war. At the same time, the Awakening Council chief Wissam al-Hardin warned that if those responsible for killing his people were not handed over, that he would take matters into his own hands. The Sunni militants have also now been linked to al-Qaeda, and they are supposedly trying to destabilize the government. The only thing we know for certain, they're all Muslims.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that